Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed, you got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you want to be. Oh, dare to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Good morning. Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, November 23rd. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you, as we always do, of course. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, Finding Authenticity, Purpose, and Meaning, Superhero Style. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners, because I realize that you have many other choices of things to do with your time. So I'm honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, you just need to press #1 to let me know you have a question or a comment. If you're on the web chat online, just type in your questions or your comments, and I will be able to see them and read them on the air. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so you know what that means. Anything can happen. Lost signals is the most common thing that happens. It happens to all of us, even me. So if your call is suddenly lost, and you can tell because you won't hear us talking anymore, just dial in again at 347-539-5700, the same number you called in the first place. And don't worry about missing anything, because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. Now, again, I'm Flora Brown. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I am a mom of four and a grandma of three, and I recently retired, well, actually going on 2 years now, after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels. And I began a number of endeavors, one of which was writing a book, and the other is starting this radio show. Now, if you haven't already done so, I want you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, where you can now invest in yourself by taking advantage of my complimentary coaching sessions, which I'm offering now through the end of the year, to help you jumpstart your 2010 goals. I also recently put up a way for you to get a sneak peek at my book. Those of you who like to try before you buy, just go over to ColorYourLifeHappy.com/about-the-book, and you'll be able to see the first 40 pages of my book completely free. Now, how cool is that? If you're interested in the coaching program, you go to the same website, except you put /get-a-coach-now. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about various ways to create the lasting happiness that we all deserve. To do that, each week I interview guests from different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change and adversity. I've had a publishing coach on. I've had an agent from publishing, career coaches, so many different areas, but all of these things contribute to our happiness. Today, my guest is Brian Kennard. He's author of Parallel Universe, Theater for Heroism, Cops and Superheroes. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you today?
I am fantastic. I want to tell my listeners a little bit about you before we begin. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Brian Kennard is an author, he's a trainer, and a law enforcement enthusiast. Oh, I'm a law enforcement enthusiast, except just from sitting on the couch, though. Former Kansas police officer he is, and Fort Hays State University. Where's Fort Hays, Brian?
Fort Hays is in Hays, Kansas. We're in Kansas, about halfway between Denver and Kansas City.
Okay. So he's a professor and a department chair of criminal justice. Ooh. Internationally recognized scholar in the fields of social psychology and criminal justice. He has a bachelor's degree in sociology and a master's degree in criminal justice from Fort Hays State University and a PhD in human services from Capella University. Wow, you're quite prepared to talk to us today about this topic, sounds like, Brian.
Well, I certainly hope so.
I think that's a good combination, your sociology and criminal justice. Those two things are good to go together. Well, let's get started. I'm really intrigued by your book title and your dealing with the comic book superheroes along with the real-life heroes that we all are familiar with. So I've told the listeners a little bit already about your background. Would you elaborate on your background a little bit?
Well, sure. You know, I'm a career cop. It's really where I got my vocational calling. We'll be talking about that here in a little bit. I spent about 8 years as a law enforcement officer before I made a jump over to academia, where I was a professor for about 6 or 7 years. I've always trained law enforcement. I've always been a law enforcement advocate and enthusiast, probably a little bit biased because I was one in a full-time capacity. But what's interesting is I've been able to take the superhero genre. I grew up a superhero fan. So I was, able to take that magic that I had captured and favored as a youth and really develop myself over the years as a law enforcement officer. So what I did as a cop and the research and the scholarship and the you know the ability to do some research and write some books gave me a very strong springboard for which I've written this new book. So I've been able to blend heroism in a couple different fashions. So I'm very excited about having an opportunity to put this down on paper, have a book come out, and be able to speak about that with folks.
Well, let's talk about your book right away. Parallel Universe, Theater for Heroism.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cops and Superheroes. What is your...
That's a long title, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's okay. Long isn't bad. It helps us get down to what you're talking about.
Well,
tell us why you wrote... What led you to write the book, and who is the intended audience? Who should be reading your book?
Well, the intended audience is very diverse. I mean, certainly cops are my central thesis, but this book is important for anybody in the public safety profession, certainly their families and friends, anybody who enjoys cop stories, television shows, and then your occasional superhero fan, although that's not required to enjoy the book. You can certainly make some analogies, and we use them as a metaphor. So, The audience is certainly wide-ranging, and I've had a degree of success with that.
So if I'm a Law and Order fan, then I will enjoy your book?
I think so, assuming that everything can be wrapped up in 50 minutes with
that's right. You only have 50 minutes.
I'll tell you Dr. Brown, I'd come into the law enforcement profession, with a relatively stamped set of moral conditions. Mm-hmm. And the things I saw in my first few years on the job certainly led to disgust and disappointment. Domestic violence, sexual abuse, drunkenness, all of these things, demons hidden behind closed doors in a facade of neighborly interaction. And more than just experiencing the worst of society, it was equally disheartening to see people who made a choice of self-destruction, spiraling towards that black hole of nothingness, when on the other side of town lay the bloodied, helpless body of a car crash victim who, his earthly soul wanted nothing but to live and to live well. So when the gap widened between the world I worked in and the world presented to me by my upbringing, I would resort to superhero themes. The idea of goodness and justice afforded to me by my childhood heroes like Superman or Captain America, it provided a world where morality worked like it was supposed to. It sparked old fantasies, and it offered me a spiritual renewal to really tackle the ugliness that was my stomping ground as a law enforcement officer.
Okay.
And I really yearned to experience that mythology again, and it really prompted a self-awareness that's led to this book. And so I more or less hurled myself into those what we call existential possibilities, you know, seeking order and meaning, mm-hmm. you know, with a good feeling. And so I was able to see that magic, you know, I had experienced when I was younger. So that was really the springboard that got me into, got me really looking at this issue.
Now, you mentioned in some of the information you sent me earlier about mm-hmm. not only psychology but the spirituality of heroism. How do you deal with the spirituality of heroism in your book?
Well, we there's a lot of books out there on the purpose-driven life, and
right.
and the idea is, what does that look like to people who face the barrel of a gun as a requirement of the job?
Yeah.
You know, charge into raging waters and burning buildings. Well, you know, it looks like a superhero, and so what we had to do is tackle that whole idea of friendship, morality, authenticity, purpose. You know, and really look at your vocational calling, whatever that may be,
mm-hmm.
and be able to blend that and put that into perspective. For a lot of cops, the superhero allegory is a great benchmark or role model in trying to understand how to live and behave in that ugly society we had talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and not only that ugly society in terms of the victims of crime that you have to go out and see horrible things that most of us will never, ever see, but then at the same time, you get so much criticism from the very people you're trying to protect, from the general public. It seems like so much of a lose-lose situation because, as you say, your job requirement is to face the barrel of a gun, to face people at their worst,
mm-hmm.
and then to have other people not always understand what you're doing can be pretty disheartening. So you have to really have a strong backbone,
you
something to fall back on.
And you know, what you had spoken of just recently is what we call the public paradox. You know, it's that uh-huh. idea of we give up some of our liberties, you know, to the state, to the government, for law enforcement officers to more or less do violence on our behalf.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a two-way street. And so we have people out there that say, we need you, but don't pull me over.
Right.
And it's certainly a... It's certainly a difficult situation to be in, but yeah.
So when you talk about how you kept yourself from becoming, because when I watch my favorite Law and Order shows and other shows, I often, you know, feel very strongly for the characters who are playing the cops, and especially the ones who encounter the horrible crime special victims unit type thing. How they keep themselves from giving up on people and or becoming so angry that, you know, it becomes personal.
Mm-hmm.
How do you
Well,
do that?
You know, and I tell you what, that's so interesting that you say that. And we'll talk about it here in a moment. But, you know, the superhero mythology, the mythology of heroism, it teaches us that we can and should risk our lives on an impossible cause.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is we have to look at the little successes, you know, the arrests, the taking the drunk driver off the street. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there is no completion with this job. There is no proper
right.
ending and no salvation.
Right.
So really what we have left is just a reappraisal of our own choice to protect
mm-hmm.
and serve. And
mm-hmm.
I can't emphasize that enough.
Wow. I like what you said, take a look at the little successes. And actually, all of us have to do that in life because there is no completion per se until, of course, we meet death at the end. There's no completion. We all are working towards something that where we're going to have some little successes and then maybe some failures. So this is something all of us need to look at. Now, before I get any further, I want to tell the listeners how they can get a hold of your book before we talk any more about it. How do they get a hold of your book?
Certainly, they can go to my website at www.watchmanbooks. That is all one word, and that is WATCHMANBOOKS.com, watchmanbooks.com.
Okay, so they can
mm-hmm.
go there and get your book. Okay, I want to get more deeper into your book,
sure.
and how do you want to approach that? Do you want to talk about what we can expect in the various chapters, or maybe pull out what you think are the most important ones for us?
Well, we can look at a little bit at everything. I certainly want to spin this on the spiritual aspect and truly that authenticity, purpose, meaning, and that spiritual fulfillment. In fact, the book really is about all of us who wake each day with an insatiable desire to help other people. You know, certainly cops are that thesis I had talked about, but really it's about all of us who share a passion to refill that spiritual cup with things that were once good, you know, about rediscovering what you already know about yourself on a deep level and surrendering to its symbolic expressions. And that's where we really get into the heart and soul of this book, is surrendering to its symbolic expressions. What we go through life attaching meaning to patterns that come up in our lives and through symbols. And so superheroes then become that symbolic interaction system. And they truly are superheroes. And I'm talking about pop culture superheroes or comic book superheroes. Mm-hmm. They are our modern mythology. And there's a psychological power in the characters that appeal to us. Now, you know, not everybody has read, you know, classic mythology or Greek mythology. And so we look at Aphrodite, we look at Zeus or folklore and legends such as Pecos Bill or John Henry. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the significance and impact that superheroes do today. Mm-hmm. And we know that. I mean, superhero comics are read by over, you know, 2 million people. There's 62 million sold each year. We have 70 to 80 years of television movies, and they've grossed billions of dollars, you know, all over the big screens, all over the world. So the point is that it's hitting a key note with people. There's a reason people are flocking to the theaters to see these superhero movies. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to take a look at that. And so the mythology of the superhero becomes a symbolic solution to find order and meaning in that absurd world. You know, we got the crime, we got the drugs, we have the violence, we have war, social unrest, politics, and so it becomes a symbolic expression as well as far as how to behave and act to function and thrive in that absurd world. So, and for the law enforcement officer specifically, it becomes that allegory for contemporary criminal justice, and we certainly need those kinds of role models today.
Okay. I noticed that Chapter 2 talks about a century of super pop culture, and you mentioned a couple already. Which of the characters stand out as strong examples of what you're talking about, bringing that solution to find meaning, the symbolic?
Sure. Well,
that's,
you know,
in the last century.
Well, for me, it was always Superman.
Okay.
It was always Spider-Man and the Lone Ranger. I know not everybody's familiar with the comic book genre, but I mean, there are literally comic strips and newspapers, radio shows from the 30s, live-action television and movies, as well as animated cartoons that are out there as well. And so I really ask people when they go through this chapter, when they look at it, is to pick out some of their favorites. Mm-hmm. When you look beyond sports heroes or perhaps actors or spiritual or religious leaders, when you look at some of the fun side of it, you know, what really tickled you when you grew up, you know, people played cowboys and Indians. I know a lot of men and women both who grew up with Tarzan and Planet of the Apes and the Lone Ranger. And so there is, at some point somewhere, there's a genre of hero or superhero that resonates with people. And so I asked folks in this chapter to really take a look at that and relive that nostalgia, I think, for lack of better words.
And what I hear you saying, too, is that we need these superheroes, whichever ones are our favorites, because of the symbolism they give us to order. I mean, we crave order so much that we can get it from these superheroes even if we don't feel we get it in our real life, daily lives. Is that what I hear you say?
Yeah, and the law enforcement officer fights that darkness, you know, in fulfilling a hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And our larger society uses them to fill a symbolic void of their own. I mean, let's face it, it's much easier to watch a tragedy from afar, on the couch watching TV or at the kitchen table reading the paper or sitting in the car down the street. So, you know, there's certainly a strong practical reason why we should, you know, cultivate things that can't be proven, you know, and that's what I mean by the symbolic interaction. So, you know, no comic book artist has ever really sat down to do a sketch and declared, I will now invent a symbol. You know, the idea is that you just can't take a rational thought and give it a symbolic form. It's already there. And
right.
So when we look at that S on Superman's chest on his costume, or if we look at the badge and star on a uniform, they're often interpreted as symbols when really they're signs.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl Jung, you know, really broke through with the symbolic interaction system as a research scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he gave us mounds and mounds of research to look at that we've applied with the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a quote from the Batman Begins movie with Christian Bale in 2005 where he says, people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed. But as a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the bat cave, it was symbolic of his progress in conquering his own tortured soul.
Mm-hmm.
And see, now we open up the whole idea of the shadow side and,
mm-hmm.
and some of the deep, dark things within us as human beings. So,
Would you talk about Chapter 3? Because I like the title, Calling All Angels. what should we expect in Chapter 3?
Well, this is really our criminological perspective of our society. You know, we talked about that ugliness as we tackle as cops.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does then is it further drives our purpose as heroes. And it's kind of our bat signal of sorts in understanding and accepting, you know, those tasks that lie ahead. And so, you know, statistically, there's just a lot of ugliness going on. I mean, a lot of violence and destruction. I mean, we have 960,000 incidences of domestic violence each year in our nation.
Oh, my goodness.
One in three
960,000.
Yes, ma'am. One in three females in the U.S. are victims of domestic violence. One in five high school females are victims of rape. Over 500,000 women are reported as stalked each year in the U.S. I mean, these are just some numbers by the
mm-hmm.
Bureau of Justice Statistics.
Mm-hmm.
In the FBI, 78% of rapes are committed by acquaintances.
Yes.
You know, from 1999 to 2003, teachers were victims of 183,000 non-fatal crimes, thefts, and violent crimes. There's one
oh.
incident of school bullying every 7 minutes with only
oh,
adult
God.
Intervention only 4% of the time. So
yeah.
from workplace violence to schools to just everything going out in society, it's a very disturbing and violent world. And,
very
you know,
disturbing.
We see it on the news at night, but it doesn't touch us unless we know somebody or ourselves have been a victim of that.
And, you know, the thing that amazes me when you talk about these statistics and these incidents is they seem to keep taking on a new shape and form, because when you mention cyberbullying or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I remember as a kid in elementary school, there was always a bully. And we could pretty much avoid the bully if we chose another route home or
right.
all kinds of things. But with the modern kids, cyberbullying puts the bully in your computer, and it sends the message, the hatred around virally. But what is amazing me now are the parents of kids who are bullying their kids' friends. And I keep thinking, how sick is that? You know, I can't think of an example of when I was growing up where that was happening, and maybe it was.
Mm-hmm.
But where the parents themselves are actually creating the
yes.
bullying on behalf of their kid or in addition to their kid or in cahoots with their kid or whatever to turn it against other kids. And I can't believe the number. And, you know, whenever I hear these statistics or I hear news story, I always think how scary it is that this is just the part we're hearing about.
Sure.
I always think
there
are more that we aren't hearing about.
And that's just the statistical perspective, you know.
Yeah.
And it really can't describe the entire picture of what's going on. And in fact, some of the things going on behind the scenes outside of just that crime-induced feelings of fear, doubt, and sorrow that destroy our way of life is that, you know, a typical American child by age 18 will have watched at least 200,000 dramatized acts of violence and 40,000 on-screen murders.
Wow.
And more than half of those violent on-screen incidences have physical aggression that would be lethal or incapacitating if it were to occur in real life.
Right.
And so
right.
when you take a look at modern television programs and movies, they just account for more than 60% of violent incidences and acts of aggression.
Now, do you see those as helping kids to feel that violence is okay because they see so much of it that it becomes okay eventually?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Well, despite that strong operant in classical models of conditioning, I mean, we have kids. It's transcended from just desensitization to mm-hmm. the association of graphic mm-hmm. images and depictions of violence. I mean, you know, imagine a six-year-old boy sharing a big tub of popcorn with his girlfriend at the movie theater. You know, he looks mm-hmm. over at her and smiles. You know, he notices her perfume and how good she smells. He suddenly, you know, hears gunfire and looks back up at the screen to see a child killed while in a gang crossfire.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're starting to associate this with with things of pleasure. And when you talk about violence permeating like it does, it certainly strikes a chord with our young children.
What is the difference, you think, between the superheroes that we were talking about earlier, let's mm-hmm. say Superman and those? What's the difference between watching those on television or movies and the real life and very dramatic and bloody crimes that we seems like they're increasing on TV shows?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a
difference?
Well,
that's interesting. Well, yes and no. There, in the superhero mythology, we also have to take a look at the villains, because the villains represent our criminals, our sociopaths, our psychopaths, and our real society. Mm-hmm. And those superhero villains are making a similar transcendence, you know, in that scope of on-page or on-screen violence. I mean, I don't know if your listeners or yourself remember the Batman franchise. I mean, back in 1966, we had a movie and television show of Batman,
mm-hmm.
and Cesar Romero portrayed the Joker.
And
then you had Jack Nicholson, who played the Joker in a 1989 film with Michael
right.
Keaton. And then
right.
you had Heath Ledger in this most recent film in 2008, for which he, you know, won a posthumous Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a look at these characters, they have become much more villainous, much more
mm-hmm.
dark.
And so
what has happened is that's conjured a fundamental core of criminality and destruction that slapped us in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And it wakes us in that process. So, you know, the antics and the goals of these villains have become truly an evolution of evil. These demonic pranksters on the flat screen appear to be logically connected, symbolic interpretations of what we fear, and they play out in the real world.
That's true. Well, I'm thinking about how as these movies are redone over and over with different actors, how I'm becoming less interested in seeing some of the newer ones because, but it didn't hit me until you said it's because the heroes are darker, and even committing criminal acts themselves are being very close to it, and I'm becoming less interested for that reason. Now, what about the cops? How can cops benefit from your book, or can people who read your book have a renewed, improved view of cops?
Well, I don't know if they can renew or improve their view of cops. I mean, usually people have a positive experience, or they have a family member or friend that's a cop, and so that appreciation and understanding is already there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea is to take a look at police officers with a more critical examination, a critical eye, and take a look at what they're going through. And really, that can go for any military soldier, emergency mm-hmm. First responder, or even a firefighter. So, you know, anybody who's certainly working in these public safety professions, you have to appreciate what they do. You know, what the superhero does is it provides a real good role model and a real good benchmark for, you know, what has become cliche is truth, justice, and the American way.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about, you know, not being able to see these movies or not wanting to see some of these movies. An interesting thing that happened in the 1980s is what we call the deconstruction. And it deconstructed the superhero. And if you remember the blockbuster 1978 movie, Superman the Movie, with Christopher Reeve,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was this knight in shining armor. I mean, obviously he had some red, white, and blue tights and a cape. But you know what I mean? It was very I don't want to call it childlike or naive, but it was very pure in the mm-hmm. sense that he represented something that was important to each and every one of us. Mm-hmm. And what happened with television and the movies in the later 80s is it deconstructed them, and it took a look at the ugly side that tends to spring out of us each, you know, once in a while, and the problems that we deal with, the morality, the choices that we make. And while that you know, kind of went back the other direction and made it more ugly, it also, you know, resonated with the general public because they appreciated being able to see some of the same problems that they face, some of the same yeah. temptations that they have. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to get, before we run out of time, we have 15 minutes already.
Okay.
I want to talk about, or ask you to talk about, From Citizen to Sentinel. What are the key points you're making in that chapter?
Well, really what I wanted to do here was take a look at the composition of a parallel. You know, there's a number of constants when you take a look at the physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual composition of a superhero. And mm-hmm. and that hero duality has been across comic books and stands and TV movies and movies for many years. When you look at Zorro, The Shadow, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers.
Oh, my. Flash Gordon. Oh, that's way back there.
Superheroes have received their powers by accident, chance, or some scientific mishap. And superheroes also look to a mentor, guide, or some missing ideal parent who really possesses that moral strength and character that pressures you to make immoral choices in the name of survival. And so mm-hmm. what this chapter does is it compares superheroes to law enforcement, from powers, dual identities, a distinctive costume, the symbols, the arch enemies, the trademark weapons, a supporting mm-hmm. cast of characters, a headquarter and base of operations, and a strong moral code. So there's about 9 or 10 things that truly make a tangible reference and composition of a parallel.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. When I saw that chapter title, I also thought about the ordinary citizen who can become very helpful in helping to fight crime, and I was thinking about the neighborhood watch type of things. How do they fit in between the citizen sentinel, the cops parallel universe? How does that regular citizen fit into that picture?
I believe that everybody likes to help out, and I believe that sense of heroism is in all of us. Whether mm-hmm. or not we choose to exercise that depends on a lot of different circumstances. But mm-hmm. but the average Joe out there that stops when you have a car off the side of the road with a flat mm-hmm. tire or with their hood up, there's a lot of people who will stop, and there's a lot of people who won't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you start taking a look at that disciplined capacity to help people, that's what sets apart the citizen from the law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. They have taken that step away and made a commitment and made it, you know, took an oath, actually, to defend and protect at all times. So you really don't get to pick and choose. And that's the difference is between the citizen and sentinel, is that you're on duty 24 hours a day. You know,
right.
You don't come home, take off your uniform, and then run to the grocery store and feel that you're off scot-free because something mm-hmm. bad might happen, somebody might recognize you, or mm-hmm. you just may have to come to somebody's aid immediately. So,
well, that gets me to how does the cop handle stepping back into their non-cop role? And because I know a few cops that I've met in organizations that I've belonged to, and one of the things that their spouses face is, you know, wanting to have a husband, wife, come home to them. And yet, as a cop, there's a certain, I guess you would call it, they have to unwind, they have to...
Sure.
Not, what's the word I'm looking for? In other words, they have to shed and come back from where they were to this other world they live in as a dad.
They certainly must decompress or de-escalate.
Decompress, there you go.
Sure. And it's very hard to do that, you know, when you're dealing with a stress level like you are. And in fact, I will tell you that depending on what research you look at, divorce and suicide are the highest in the law enforcement profession. I mean, more than any other profession, they're huge. It takes a toll. It certainly takes a toll. And so you have to have some perspective. And again, that's that's where that authenticity and purpose and meaning and spirit, you know, we talk about refilling our spiritual cup. Mm-hmm. You have to surround yourself with loving and caring individuals who will continually refill that cup for you. And
I like that. Refill that spiritual cup. I like that.
You have to do it, or else you're going to fall by the wayside. You're going to become a statistic, and we've just seen it happen way too many times. But it is very hard to deal with what we deal with and then come home, set your bag down, and say, "Hi, honey, I'm home," and help out making dinner or get the kids down. It's very, very difficult. But at the same time, can you do anything different? I mean, when you've made the choice for public safety and protection, again, it is, you know, can Spider-Man, can Peter Parker step away from that? Absolutely not. And that's why he has a hard time with a girlfriend or keeping his job.
Right.
You know, and we see those themes over and over and over again. You know, Clark Kent and how we remember him with the hat, the eyeglasses, the weakness, the bumbling. A lot of people will say that was Superman's perspective on us. That's how he saw us and how we, more or less how he was able to blend in to society. But the problem is that he wasn't truly living to his gifts and to his purpose. Only when he ripped open that shirt and exposed that iconic S was he able to really swoosh into the sky and participate fully with the gifts that he had. So,
when you said that, it reminded me of when I used to take my son to the movies, and he would totally lose interest as soon as Superman was no longer saving anyone. And, you know, when it got to the just dialogue or the almost romantic part, my son would say, "Mom, when is he going to start saving people again?" That's all he wanted to see. He did not want to hear any dialogue or scene.
When the Incredible Hulk television series ran from 1978 to 1982, I had visited with executive producer Kenneth Johnson for that television show, and he said every week for that 1 hour that it ran, people would turn on the TV or kids would flock to the TV screen during those 10 minutes when David Banner would Hulk out, rip out of his shirt, and go and throw some people around. And then when it came back to the boring dialogue, they were gone. So I certainly understand that, and I did it myself.
Now, what is Chapter 7 is called Noble Instincts. What do you cover in Noble Instincts?
Well, Noble Instincts really takes a look at that. Now, it compiles, first of all, it compiles a few personal stories from myself and from cops who have been there. And really what it is it emotionally expresses the psychology and spirituality of heroism, running towards the sound of the guns instead of away, letting go of that vice grip of mortality, transcendence, and living with pain and suffering as a noble trade-off for saving others and giving them peace. You know, in our superhero genre, like Batman or Superman, cops are ready to die. Okay, they're ready to die, and it's important that they're prepared to do so. And they have to come to terms with that inevitability of death. And like I said before, what superheroes teach us is that we can and should risk our life on that impossible cause and to celebrate, you know, to celebrate some of those successes.
That's very important what you just said, that we must be willing to risk our lives for those impossible causes. And it seems to me that true success is not possible until you fully commit to whatever it is. You know, obviously we're not all in law enforcement, but whatever we're in, there's a risk of some kind at some level. And if we're not ready to give our lives for it, we really aren't fully committed to it, whatever it is.
Yes, and, you know, can I make a religious implication?
Please do.
Well, with a Christ-like servitude like that, our collective noble instincts and those left unspoken are really statements of faith, which create a guiding light and beacon for hope, you know, during our dark times. And there's a passage from the Bible that's very popular among law enforcement officers, and it says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God." And so, you know, that's a really good moral compass, spiritual compass to point us in the direction when we call our heroes saviors.
Now, speaking of spirituality, in the spiritual journey that you advocate, is there a place for meditation, prayer, and all of these things that so many of us think about when we think about spiritual journeys?
Yes, and you know, fate rarely comes at a time of our choosing. So when something bad goes down, that is not the best time to sit down and decide to have a prayer. I mean, you certainly can, and sure, I can advocate for that, but the damage is already right in front of you. So you know, I often talk to folks about that, and that prayer and that meditation needs to be, I mean, that is training. I mean, that is true core fundamental training. You have to do it all the time. You have to do it every day, mm-hmm, and it's best to do it in those moments where you have some silence, when you're mm-hmm not taking care of the kids or taking care of your spouse or right, or working, and right, and that preparation will definitely pay off when the time comes, because you are at peace with yourself. When you talk about transcendence and actually becoming the other person, you're ready to do that a little bit more readily when you understand that. And then that becomes, you know, that's releasing the grip of mortality, that vice grip of mortality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that. My mother used to have a saying that ties into what you just said, and she used to say, you have to keep a prayer in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And by that, she was referring to the fact, like you're saying, you don't wait until something happens. You're always prepared. You always are prayerful. And I like your idea of prayer and meditation daily as preparation, mm-hmm, for leading your life throughout the day, and not just waiting for something to happen and then you go, oh Lord, and you're ready to pray.
Right. Well, and you know, from Oedipus at Colonus to Superman to Batman, or even, you know, Jesus Christ, we have called our heroes saviors in both literal and symbolic senses, and mm-hmm, and they deliver us from evil and the termination of our soul's higher existence. And so noble instincts, as I've explained it in this chapter, arises out of a cultural hero system, and allows us to believe that we can transcend death by participating in something of lasting worth. Mm-hmm. And for many, the service and honor of the law enforcement profession provides that sense of self-worth and obligation to others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that, the self-worth, that obligation to others, that service, that reaching out is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
It, we're almost at the end of our show today, so I want you to think about if you have any closing words for the listeners, something that you want to stick with them before they dash over to get your book at watchmanbooks.com.
One of the underlying premises of this book is, who are you? And that lands, that answer lies only with you. And as you step out into the rain and open that umbrella for others to take shelter in, it really requires you to embrace a responsibility to seek out answers to suffering and injustice, and to do so within that complex arena of morals, values, laws, and politics. So very important to contemplate questions of self, which really form the backbone of our creative journeys as superheroes.
Wow. I really am happy I learned about your book, because it crosses a number of things. It pulls a number of things together that people probably hadn't thought about in the context of cops and superheroes. I love the tie-in with the spirituality, the Savior. It's fantastic. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to come on my show today.
And I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I really do.
Thank you. I know that people have definitely been enlightened. I know I have. Encouraged and empowered, because each time we hear messages of this type, it helps to pull us closer and closer to where we need to be. I like your emphasis on it starts with us finding out who we are, and it's just fantastic. Thank you so much. Now, for those on the line, or, you know, this show is recorded, so sometimes people listen later, the episode is going to be on my radio page, which is blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. So those of you who are listening can share that information with your friends. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and invite you to join me again next Monday, November 30th at 11 a.m. We're going to have another exciting show. I want to thank you again, Brian, so much for coming on, and I want to urge listeners to dash over and get Brian's book at watchmanbooks.com. Let me remind you, too, listeners, that you can sign up for a complimentary coaching session to help jumpstart your 2010 goals over at ColorYourLifeHappy.com. I'm your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday, at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week, a fantastic Thanksgiving, and come back and join us again next week. And, of course, you know, I always ask you to do one thing for me, and you know what that is.